Welcome to Fat Camp Show number 13 for May 27th, 2016. Fatbike.com presents Fat Camp, a more or less monthly podcast covering different technical aspects of fat and plus bikes. Look for all our shows at fat-bike.com/radio or subscribe to our feed on iTunes.
Living life with freedom and ease. Waiting for that government cheese. Never tried to shake the disease. Happy just to do what I please. Oh, don't wanna get a job, baby. Don't want no bills you pay.
That's alright. Hey, welcome to Fat Camp, fellow fat campers. How you doing tonight, Ken?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful. How about you, Andy?
I am doing amazing in the land of the hand here in this beautiful spring day of May. We've got an interesting show that it might just go an hour like normal, but actually
we started off thinking it was going to be short.
We kind of were going to plan a shorter one just kind of to give you folks maybe just a break of listening to blah, blah, blah for that long. But we've got some things to talk about tonight. Up first, we've got some people that are listening to us and commenting on...
Imagine that.
Yeah, I know.
Wow, amazing. Somebody actually listens to us.
I know. We've got a couple of guys that have asked some questions, posted some questions up at fatbike.com. And I was going to say we, but Ken wants to get back to some of those questions from some guys that are listening to us. So that's first up. We're also going to talk real quick about one particular product and maybe a couple more that we're really stoked for for next winter. So that's up. We're also going to talk about...
That's the content for you fat bikers out there.
Right on.
So
right
hang
on.
In there. We'll talk about some good stuff for you.
Right on. We've also got on the docket tonight a discussion about if plus bikes are faster than regular mountain bikes. So that's that'll be the bulk of it, I think. That's where we're going.
Yeah, we could talk about that one for a long time.
And then real briefly, we've got some things going on the Mountain Bike Project website, but I also think it's an app that you and I are familiar with, but it's Mountain Bike MTB Project.
It's something that if people are not familiar with, they need to be familiar with because it's an awesome resource.
Right, so we've started to add that, some local trails there, so we'll talk about that. And we've also got a way to get in touch with us now, and we'll bring that up at the end, but we've got an email account that you can send us all the fan mail, and we're hitting the social media.
Yeah, see, we first started out with email, so we're getting we're getting into the 90s now.
And we're going to be on the Instagram.
We're just
going to
launch right into Instagram world.
The Instagram world. So we'll you got to listen for the blah, 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 and then we'll tell you where to look up the Instagram account and where to send your hate mail. So should be a good show. Glad you stopped plugged us in and listened to us. So we'll be right back after this after these sweet ass tunes that Ken's gonna put in.
Welcome back, campers. That was just the sound of joy there.
Got 99 problems.
But
yeah, the bitch ain't bike, one.
Bike's not one, yeah, or whatever. Yeah, however you want to look at it. So, okay, let's get into... We got some really good comments on our last show.
Yeah,
sure did. I'm really stoked that people were willing to take the time to, you know, ask some really good questions in there and, you know, provide a lot of really good information. So one of the first ones was, what about lefties? Because, I mean, our last show... We went through a whole bunch of different forks, and I got to admit, you know,
we left out the lefty.
Yeah. How could we do that?
Jeez, oh, Pete.
Jeez. So, I'll be honest, it wasn't 100% conscious. It's just, the lefties are one of those things that, if they're coming on a Cannondale, it's a great solution. You know, the systems integration, whatever you want to end up calling it, where they really design their bikes around kind of a unique, you know, design and really factor that in. It's really cool. And I'm so stoked that Cannondale is starting to make some plus and some fat bike specific forks.
Oh, I didn't know they were making them specific for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, I didn't do my research before this. I don't know it as well as I should, but if I remember correctly, I think it's the Olaf.
Oh, yeah.
That they're doing for the frat bike, yep. Which is absolutely awesome.
Okay.
I'm a huge fan of Lefty from an engineering mindset.
What do you mean?
Well, it's if you look at suspension on any other vehicle, it pretty much only ends up having, you know, sort of one shock. It's got one side. Okay. And the wheel is cantilevered out there.
Right.
You look at your cars or, you know, motorcycles or anything like that. Okay. You know, typically that's always the design. It just makes sense.
Right.
There, you know, whenever you introduce two legs, you know, of a telescoping fork, it's kind of a dumb design because when you start to side load that, the legs start to bind and you've got all these issues. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, a two-legged telescoping fork is a bad design. I think, you know, things have matured and we've got to a really good place. But I think the Lefty is kind of a superior engineering solution.
Hmm.
You know, you look at like the needle bearings in there, so it's a super low stiction type situation and, you know, some of the things like that. It's really cool. And like in the case of fat bikes and some things like that, I think the added clearance that you get from it,
sure,
is awesome. You know, they've definitely proven that there isn't any issue with stiffness or, you know, stuff like that. My personal, I think I would describe this as more of a bias, is that the Lefties that I've ridden, I haven't really liked the way the shock is set up. I don't like the dampening. Okay. They just don't ride as well as another high-end two-legged fork.
But and, that's your personal bias, though.
Right. And I think it has a lot more to do with the fact that I've never had a situation where I've owned a Lefty and I've really spent the time to play around with oil and stuff like that to get the dampening the way I want it and really dial a thing in. The other thing about the Lefty is, you know, you can, in some situations, you can end up getting different clamps or you can get a bike where, you know, it can be kind of designed around it and things like that. But for a lot of people, there's some sort of hurdles or whatever you want to call it to just being able to slap that on your bike.
Okay.
And your traditional telescoping fork, you know, you can just slap that on your bike and you're good
to
go.
Right.
So there's some things against the Lefties for mainstream use. You know, they're best in kind of a specialized application, but I'm a Lefty fan in a lot of ways, just from the engineering aspect of it. So Lefty's badass.
All right. So if we could go back, we'd definitely add that to that.
Yeah.
Kick-ass document.
Yeah. No doubt about it.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool.
So I was glad somebody mentioned that and called us out.
No,
on that.
Right on. Yeah.
And then we ended up getting a comment from Mark, and he had a whole lot of comments, which was cool because he provided a lot of detail and he brought up a lot of good points.
Right on.
He had kind of two primary things. One was, what is the ideal setup when it comes to rim width and tire size and things like that
for fat bikes or plus bikes?
Plus bikes, excuse
okay.
me. Thank
All right.
you.
All right.
And we're gonna probably get into that a whole lot more later in the show when we start talking about what's faster, a plus bike or 29 or what have you.
Okay.
So I don't want to get into that too much right now.
Mm-hmm.
But he ended up providing a lot of really good, you know, figures and information about like the differences in weights and some of those factors. And, you know, I'll be perfectly honest, you know, we'll talk more about this later, but you know, my opinion and what my experience has been is that like a 30 millimeter internal width rim is plenty wide enough to make a 3-inch tire ride well.
Right.
I've bounced between that and like a 40 or 44 millimeter internal width rim. I really don't notice any difference as far as the ride quality. You know, I don't feel like I've got more float. I don't feel like the tires, you know, less squirmy. I don't feel like I can run lower pressure with a wider rim.
Same amount of traction.
Yeah, same amount of traction. Okay. Is, you know, all the tire characteristics seem the same.
Okay.
The one thing I do notice is it's heavier.
All right.
So, you know, that's me as one data point.
Right.
It's not something that I feel like it's necessarily going to apply to everybody.
Right.
But I do think that's going to be one of those things that does settle out. And we'll get into that more because I think we're going to start to see a spectrum. And people are going to play around a lot, and I think there's going to be a sort of a settling in on, okay, this is what's best for this application. This is what's best for this application.
Do you want to talk about more about just being a data point and me being the, like half a data point? And then,
well, you know, I think that really naturally kind of goes into our conversation bikes versus traditional mountain bikes, and which is faster.
Gotcha.
So
we'll get into that later down the road.
Yeah. So I don't want to touch that quite yet.
Okay.
But I really do think that that's the case. And I guess what.
So Mark, I don't want to shift
into my math teacher mode here, but you know what we're talking about is kind of the law of large numbers and sample sizes and stuff like that.
Ooh,
where you know, some of these statistical stuff that people might remember from back in the day when they were in school.
No, you're the only person that remembers that.
Yeah, so you know, just because it works for one person, it doesn't mean it's going to work for everybody. I guess is the common sense way of putting
there you
it.
Go. Yeah.
But no,
I mean you're not the expert on everything,
and for everyone,
right?
No, I'm definitely not.
All right.
So Mark brought up another point. He talked about sort of the dimension aspect and what ends up happening with rim widths, as far as tire diameter and tire, you know, width and some of the things like that, and you know, his suggestion was that we should really talk about that. But I'll be honest. I don't want to talk about that because I feel like the difference is so subtle that it kind of clouds a lot of the conversation about how this stuff is actually going to ride.
Okay.
Like I said, you know, when I've ridden a wider and, you know, rim versus a skinnier rim, within reason, you know, I haven't noticed any difference on the trail. If I had to be like blindfolded or however the hell you're going to do something like that.
Right, right.
You know, I really couldn't tell the difference. So, but what I do notice is the weight.
Okay.
So, you know, I really don't think, you know, like when you talk about like using a skinnier rim or a wider rim, and this actually gets discussed a lot of times in the fat bike world because, you know, you look at fat bike rims and, you know, sort of the skinniest traditional fat bike rim is like a 65 millimeter,
yep.
Or you can go up to 100 millimeter.
Right.
You know, that's going to greatly change the dimensions of your tire.
Mm-hmm.
The plus bike world is much more subtle than that. From what I've experienced, and I, you know, if it makes a 0.1 difference in the diameter of the tire, I'm not going to notice that. You know, it's same thing with the width. You know, it's like if it spreads that tire out by 0.2 inches, but I can't really run lower pressure or anything, I'm not going to notice that. I notice the weight, and that's I feel like I don't want to cloud the issue more. If you can ride, you know, setup A and setup B, and you don't notice a difference on the trail,
mm-hmm.
you know, you only notice a difference when you crack out your calipers.
Sure,
it's not that big a difference.
Oh, I gotcha.
You know, whereas, you know, the weight and how the thing accelerates. Okay. That's something, that's a metric that I think really kind of counts right now. You know, so, you know, Mark brought up some stuff that I definitely geek out about. I think about, you know, but I haven't come up with anything definitive that I feel like I want to talk about on the show because and I'm not trying to disparage anybody on, you know, MTBR or anything like that, but, you know, because I love it. I absolutely love MTBR.
Oh.
There's people that bring up all sorts of crazy shit, and I love it because you can read this stuff and you kind of just get these, you know, just off the wall things and all sorts of stuff, and it really kind of makes you kind of think more about, okay, is this valid? Is this not?
Mm-hmm.
Is this person reliable? What they're saying? Does this match what my experience is? Does this match what other people's experience are?
Sure.
Or is this just some whack job talking about
some
stuff
and troll just stirring the pot?
Yeah. And you know, it's really good for kind of working through this, but I don't want to talk on this show about something that I don't feel pretty solid about.
Gotcha.
You know, for instance, when I talk about rim width and stuff like that, when I have ridden both back to back in my little neck of the woods, which is the Midwest, which is pretty tame trail wise, and I've ridden it, you know, in several different places around the country. So, mm-hmm. you know, I'm getting a wide variety of, you know, trail conditions and things like that. And, you know, the same thing, my impressions are the same across the board. And then there's other people that I respect that are backing up what my experiences are. That's when I feel like, okay, I want to talk about it on the show.
Right.
I feel like it's not scientifically proven, but it's substantial enough that I feel like it's worthy to talk about. you know, the more informal, theoretical, you know, just tossing stuff out there conversations, that's what happens on, you know, the ride to the trailhead.
Yeah, those are fun.
Yeah, I mean, and they're awesome. It's like, yeah. I really value those things, but I don't want this to digress into, you know, whatever my current, you know, crazy ass idea is.
Right, right.
And theory is about whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, have it really not be substantiated in some way. And gotcha. I'm not saying everything we say is completely substantiated and rock solid. I mean, we're going to be wrong about a lot of stuff.
No,
there's no doubt.
It might not be the nipple washers.
Exactly.
You might want to lace up your wheel without nipple washers.
But at the same time, you know, it's like, you know, if I'm feeling pretty solid about it, that's when I talk about it on here.
Gotcha.
You know, so, you know.
Well, and if I ever feel solid about anything, shit, I'll stand on top of the mountain and shout it out loud. Holy cow. Because, you know, I'm just here to learn as well as everybody else is. So, but I understand what you're saying. You know, you know, there's who knows who's listening to this and who knows what experiences they've had and where they ride.
Yeah, I mean, they're guys that know a lot more.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And I don't want
to. They probably say the same thing, though, too.
Yeah.
They probably saying, hey, but this is just based upon my experience.
Yeah.
You know, I've ridden this and I've ridden this and I've ridden this and this is what I've collected, you know, in my day.
And that's the thing. There's such a variety of conditions that people ride in.
Right.
It's pretty hard to end up coming up with absolutes.
Right. But I know Ken feels the same way, but we really do appreciate that feedback. It's interesting and it's fun to know that, you know, there's geeks out there that are totally geeking out on this same kind of stuff. And instead of maybe going to fatbike.com, you can email us now. You know, we set up a Gmail account, so it's fatcamppodcasters, all one word, fatcampodcasters,
plural, with an S on
with
the
an
end.
S, yeah, because there's more than one of us now. You know, there's two of us, fatcamppodcasters. That's a Gmail account, so send that to gmail.com. And also, if you just scroll down, there'll be a link there too. And so shoot us an email if you'd prefer to do it that way. And heck, we could maybe someday in the future have a whole section of, you know, feedback, you know, people asking questions, and that would be we could just do that. So that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We'd love to end up doing it. So, you know, keep comments and questions and stuff coming. 'Cause you know,
nipple washers.
Yeah. It's all about the nipple washers.
Right. Right. But anyway, I think why don't we take a quick break, because we tend to not take breaks, and we'll take some quick ones, and then we'll come back with some new stuff that's coming down the road.
Cheers. Welcome back, campers.
Howdy ho.
So, probably the biggest thing that I've seen that's come out recently that's got me pretty stoked that we haven't talked about, and I haven't seen really much press about.
Yeah.
New Lake boots.
Mm-hmm.
This is one for you fat bikers out there. Basically, Lake has upped their game. They are making something that I would describe as being somewhere between the Wolfenheimer and what is it, the
Wolfengazer, I don't know.
Yeah, that
the next
$1 million 45 North, like super Arctic
boot. -400 degrees, you know, warm. Yeah, do you think that Lake kind of felt some pressure?
Oh, I'm sure they did.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I can't believe they wouldn't, because, you know, they were kind of there was definitely a hierarchy. You know, the Lake boot was solid and worked really well for a lot of people. But then, you know, the Wolfenheimer is definitively a colder weather boot, you know.
It looks like it could also double as maybe your basketball shoe, too. I mean, it's a super high top, man.
Yeah. No, I'm just stoked to start seeing some competition in this sector.
Right.
Because, you know, I've got the Wolfenheimers from, like, the first gen ones.
Right.
And they've treated me great. They're starting to get worn out.
Yeah.
You know, I probably will consider replacing them this year. And, you know, it's nothing against 45 North, but I want to be able to have two different kick-ass boots to choose from,
sure,
from two different manufacturers.
Yeah.
You know, it's like in the new Wolfenheimer is a big improvement over the, you know, the first gen one.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm pretty stoked on that, and that's what I was assuming I was gonna get. And
Wolfgar, I think it's called.
Yeah, that's the super, okay, that's the super 45 North one.
Right.
But it's pretty cool to end up having, you know, a whole different manufacturer come out to consider.
Right. Have they talked about how cold this can go, this new lake?
It's really preliminary. Okay. It seems like
it's the MX-400.
Yeah, it's going to, I don't think this is going to completely replace the existing lake winter boot.
The 303?
Yeah, this is going to supplement it. It's basically going to be a colder version of the 303, mm-hmm, or whatever the current one is.
All right. Cool.
So, yeah, it's kind of like how 45 North has done their Wolfenheimer and then the Wolfgar or whatever the heck it is. You know, and both of them, they kind of complement each other. One's a colder weather version than the other one. same sort of things going on with Lake.
Okay.
So it's just, you know, there's some other great manufacturers out there. You know, Bontrager's got a good boot out there. You know, Specialized has got a good boot out there.
Yeah.
You know, it's just nice to see Lake up in their game too.
And we probably mentioned it right after the winter. I don't know if we recorded a podcast that never got released, but I think we did. The accessories.
Yeah.
You know, and just how I think they're responding to what customers need. You know?
Yep.
And so Lake's like, okay, we got to make another boot, man. We got to step it up a little bit.
You know, let's face it. It seems like the fat bike market in general is somewhat matured, or whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
Stagnated. I don't know quite what the right term is for it, but you know, it seems like innovation isn't really kind of taken off on the bike world,
mm-hmm,
but we're starting to see some really good stuff what comes with accessory world.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't have any firsthand experience with, like, let's say the Specialized clothing and stuff. I don't think we've ever talked about that, but they've got some, you know, fat bike specific clothing and stuff like that. It's got some really cool features. It's a premium price. As a lot of this stuff, you know, whenever something new is introduced, typically it comes at the premium level and then it works its way down.
Right.
You know, I kind of feel like, you know, the market's maturing where, you know, the whole package of what you need to have good winter riding is starting to, you know, really kind of diversifying. We're starting to get some really good options, which is
sweet. Bontrager do that though too? And I think, you know, Gomez got a hold of that and sent it out,
yep,
and reviewed it. Pearl Zumi did the same thing.
Yeah.
I remember reading some stuff at fatbike.com about the new Pearl Zumi stuff. So
yeah, just, I mean, a lot of good products.
Yeah.
And this is just another example of that,
yeah,
you know, so I'm stoked that, you know, they're really kitting us out.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder what the price, I wonder what the price point is going to be on this boot, because, you know, this stuff is expensive. I mean, it's worth it and it'll last a long time, but still, I mean, the colder you're going to ride in, the more expensive you're going to pay to have that gear.
In a lot of cases. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's, if you want a traditional clip and boot versus a Sorrel or whatever, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
the human snow tire, you know.
Yeah. And you know, I have to admit, I'm a, you know, a clipless pedal person in the winter.
Yeah.
There's other people that are flat pedals, which is cool. You know,
yeah, right on.
I mean, it works for everybody. It's just, it's good to see a diversity of options.
Yeah.
So that was probably the thing that I saw one single article in Bike Rumor, which we'll link to, about that. I haven't seen anything else about the Lake boot. So I kind of wanted to toss that out there on here because that's something excited, you know, that I'm excited about that I think a lot of other people will be excited about.
Yeah,
too.
I hope to see somebody with that around here, you know, come December, January.
Yeah, and what will most likely happen is that, you know, we're kind of in a lull of the bike shows.
Right.
So, you know, we might end up seeing it, I don't know, Frostbike or something like that starting to, you know, later summer. And then we've got Interbike and Eurobike and all these other bike shows where, you know, cool shit's released basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So my guess is that this was kind of a pre, you know, release kind of thing, like a teaser of what's coming. We're going to get a lot more details come, you know, the sort of the fallish area, and hopefully come winter it's going to be available and you can actually buy it.
Nice.
Yeah,
well, it was worth mentioning though, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. You know, a lot of other kind of cool stuff is finally becoming available. I think we've talked about it before, but I mean, like Bontrager, it sounds like they're really actually starting to release some of their 27.5 tires.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had the, I'm blanking on the name of it. Oh, the Hodag. Sorry about that. Yeah, they've had the Hodag for a while, which is supposedly a 3.8, more like a 3.5-inch tire.
Okay.
And now they've got a Chupacabra, so they got a 3-inch tire that's available.
Sure.
They've got the Barbagazzi, which is a 4.5-inch tire.
Yeah.
There's some cool stuff that we've seen a lot of teaser stuff on over the winter, but now is actually here and that you can get. Uh-huh. So it's kind of exciting to see that. You know, the Barbagazzi tire, you know, which is a 4.5-inch, you know, 27.5 tire. Is that going to see a whole lot of use right now? Eh, probably not. Yeah. But it's something that it's good to end up having available before November or December or January, February. You know?
Right.
So anything else that's, you know, kind of got you stoked that you've seen come out?
To be honest, I'm so damn busy right now it's a busy time for public school teachers.
Yeah.
These days,
yeah.
Holy cow. But, I try to click on Bike Rumor once in a while and keep tabs at, Uncle Gomez's site. I think he had a good review of some, boots for, riding on the beach.
Yeah. That was interesting. Yeah, that was real good. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've had good experiences with NRS stuff, from my paddling days, you know, kayaking and stuff. So I thought that was a good review, but
other than that, nothing really on my radar that is worth mentioning right now.
So I'd say then let's take a break and then we'll come back and we're going to talk about which is faster, plus bikes or traditional mountain
Surprise.
Bikes.
Surprise.
Welcome back, campers. Now we're going to end up talking about something that, you know, has been part of a lot of informal conversation. You know, like at the beginning of the show, I kind of mentioned, I don't want to talk about stuff on here unless I feel kind of solid about it. And
more than just you being solid on it.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, I kind of want to have my experience corroborated by other people so I don't feel like I'm just talking bullshit, basically.
Right.
And
nipple washers.
There was a pretty interesting video that was released. I know it was released on like Bike Rumor and, you know, I think it was a UK mountain bike magazine. I don't really remember. I'm sorry. I'm not doing my research providing attribution where it should be.
Yeah, the link's down there.
We're going to provide a link to this. It's on YouTube. And it's
awesome.
One guy's experience comparing same exact bike. It was a Specialized 6 Fatty with the B plus setup versus a traditional 29er setup.
Okay.
And the reason why, I mean, Joe Blow could do this, but this dude did a really good job creating this video.
Yeah.
He made it as, you know, scientific as you could. He really kind of factored in everything that could contribute one way or the other as best he could. You know, he really kind of, you know, the devil's in the details on this type of thing.
Yep.
And he tested on a variety of different surfaces and courses and things like that. And kind of shared what his results were.
He didn't use the juice. But keep going.
Yeah. So it was a very well made video. And you know, this is a sample size of one dude and one bike.
Pause the podcast. Go down there and watch it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I highly recommend it.
If you haven't seen it, and then come back and listen to this discussion right now.
Yeah. So, okay, one dude. Now, the things that are noteworthy are that he tried, you know, this comparison using a variety of different 29er tires, depending on what sort of would be the ideal 29er tire for, you know, different course conditions. Kept the B plus tire, you know, the same throughout.
Yep.
You know, really kind of dialed in his pressures and did some of the things like that. And then all of the segments looked like they were downhill.
Mm-hmm.
But he ended up checking out road, gravel, and then a variety of different trail environments.
Yeah, yeah.
So on the road, the B plus was slower. He didn't really provide specifics. He just said it was slower. That totally matches my experience.
Right. But
everything else, it was faster.
The gravel one is what blew right. me away.
Yeah. And, you know, and he did, I mean, maybe I'm the only person that's kind of familiar with roll down tests. I don't know. This might be just a total dork fest.
Yeah, but, you are.
But, traditionally, like, this is kind of a timeless way to check out, and compare roll and resistance to different tires. And you do a roll down test, and there's a variety of ways you can do that.
Okay.
What you can end up doing is you pick some sort of fixed course that you always are going to go down, you know, sort of the same exact line down. And a lot of times you can end up doing kind of a gradual downhill. And what you do is you make sure you start it at the same speed, you know, depending on what the grade is like. You know, you want it to be kind of shallow. You don't want it to be like a super fast downhill, because if you get going too fast, then aerodynamics come into play. So okay. if your body position isn't the same or whatever, it can skew your results.
Okay.
So you want to have it kind of like a pretty shallow grade, where your predominant thing that's slowing you down is going to end up being your rolling friction.
Gotcha.
So you basically can do timed runs on a fixed length course on exactly the same, you know, track each single time, and you get a very I'm not sure if accurate is quite the best way of putting it, but you can definitely tell which tires have lower rolling resistance than others.
Okay.
You know, this is something that has been done for 10-20 years in cross country race circles. So it's not a new technique whatsoever at all. It might have been done a lot of other things. I've always kind of heard about it in, you know, like cross country race.
Seems bikes. Kind of common sense.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you really can kind of control for the variables. So he didn't provide a ton of details, but it looks like he ended up, you know, basically following this really basic timeless protocol on a gravel downhill, and the plus bike ended up being faster.
Wow.
Which is kind of nuts.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, a gravel road, this wasn't like some like super sandy, soft gravel road. This was like, looked like it was a pretty hard packed gravel road, you know, and really the only thing that was providing texture on that gravel road was the gravel itself. It wasn't like it was like all washboarded out and stuff.
Now, the question I have, if you're going faster, will that be true due to wind resistance?
Well, let's get to that in a second.
Okay.
Because that, I think there's a lot of sort of implications, or whatever you want to describe it as, that kind of end up being a result of talking about this.
Okay.
So that was one scenario.
So just roll out test, plus bike faster than 29er.
On gravel roads.
Okay.
Yep. And then he did a variety of other downhill runs.
Okay.
Some of which are, you know, looked like they were a lot smoother. Some of which, you know, were, you know, a pretty gnarly setup.
Oh yeah.
You know, like yeah. very rocky, very bumpy, mm-hmm. very loamy. So, you know, a wide range of other kind of conditions. If I remember, he did three other sort of, you know, traditional single track type scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
And in every single one, plus bike was faster.
Gotcha.
And what happened was it seemed like the gnarlier the setup, you know, the gnarlier the trail, the faster the plus bike was.
Gotcha.
So
that didn't surprise me.
It didn't surprise me either, based on my experience.
Right.
But I think, you know, there's this very ingrained mindset that skinnier tires and higher pressure are faster. And this basically blew that completely out of the water.
And we've talked about that, you know, in the past on this podcast, that's what we used to think.
Yep.
Jack it up to 40, 50.
Yep.
1.95.
Well, and I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but there's another mountain bike podcast, and it's not MTBR Radio or anything like that.
Okay.
Where they were talking about tire selection recently, and they talked about, you know, pumping it up and having it be a faster setup. And
oh, wow.
That's just false. Okay. You know, and I'm not trying to throw them under the bus. It's this notion that we've been living with for ages, and it's just not accurate.
Oh.
So, you know, being able to run lower pressure on any kind of bumpy surface. And then the reason why I'm kind of hammering this home is that, you know, when I think about a bumpy surface, I'm not thinking about a gravel road being a bumpy surface. I'm thinking of like some rooty, rocky downhill as being bumpy. No,
yeah.
No. All it takes is, even a gravel surface, that much of a bumpy surface,
yeah,
where the lower pressure really starts to end up shining as far as your rolling resistance. Huh. So,
after I've done this, I want to know what podcast that was.
So, you know, it's one of those things that is against what I would describe as common sense, or what has been common knowledge. I guess that's probably the better way of phrasing it.
Okay, yeah.
For a lot of years.
Right.
So there's a lot of misconceptions about that.
Uh-huh.
So,
check it out. That's good. That was good to see.
Yeah, it was. So I guess, you know, this is where it really, corroborates, you know, sort of what my own experience has been. I ended up switching over to a 29 plus bike. Well, it's what, 3 years ago?
Three years ago.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, like, bam, I'm setting Strava PRs and KOMs. And that's not just on the downs, that's on the ups.
Okay.
You know, there was a significant speed increase with my riding.
Okay.
And I had nothing else to really attribute it to. I mean, my fitness was good at the time, but, you know, it really was the bike.
Gotcha.
I mean, I was firmly convinced of that. But once again, you know, like I talked about, I'm a data point of one.
Right.
So then, you know, I'm like blathering about, you know, how amazing this is to, you know,
me,
the guys I ride with. Yeah. Yeah. You.
Right.
Yeah. And so, you know, I've kind of seen different people switch over and everybody's had the same experience. Now that is on our local trails. You know, that's not, you know, this is Midwest riding. It's pretty chill. You know, it's not super technical, but pretty much everybody I've seen has seen this marked increase mm-hmm. in speed.
Right.
You know, and it really kind of matches what this video talks about.
Yeah.
So I think there's something legit here. You know, the video is really just, you know, one dude, one bike, you know, it's one, a sample size of one, you know, but it's starting to match up with enough other things that I think there's something to it.
Do you think that will bleed into, or at what rate will we start seeing plus tires, even B plus or 29 plus, lining up at the race?
Well, and this yeah. So this video is got a definite enduro focus with some
totally.
Applicability to cross country world.
Right.
Most of my experience, I've never done any kind of formal enduro type racing or whatever. Mm-hmm. Done a lot of informal, you
right.
know.
yeah, exactly.
To the bottom of the hill first. I've come from a cross country background and stuff like that. And from my experience, I think there's a lot of situations, and I'm going to be kind of specific on here, in a what I would describe as kind of either a terrain specific or like a time trial type scenario where the plus bike is faster.
Okay.
That said, I don't necessarily think it's faster always in a race scenario.
Why?
Because there's a lot more, like when you get into a competitive race situation, there's a lot more than just having the fastest bike setup that you can have. And it's kind of tough to explain. You know, a lot of times in a race situation, for a good chunk of the race, you're just sitting on wheels. You're saving energy.
Okay, yeah.
You know, there's people attacking. There's all these different things. You got to close gaps. And having that heavier wheel set can be a detriment.
Okay.
You know, if you're basically sitting in and you're riding on somebody's wheel and he's got a super lightweight wheel set,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's not going to be able to go through that corner that fast.
Right.
You know, because he's, you know, let's say he's riding semi-slicks and, you know, some 450 gram tire
mm-hmm.
and, you know, he's got, you know, just this huge engine.
Right.
So the dude's like just powering like crazy on the flats and you're just hanging on for dear life, drafting him because, you know, your speeds are really high. You know, it's a fast cross country type scenario. That guy is going to be able to accelerate way quicker than you. So every single time that dude like basically gets on the pedals, he's going to open up a gap on you and he's going to be up to speed in two pedal strokes. Whereas with your heavier wheel set, it's going to take you 3-4 pedal strokes to basically get up to the same speed. And then you still have to close the gap to the guy.
You're going
to
run out of matches.
And that's exactly it. You know, it really kind of depends on your scenario.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't want to put any words in, you know, sort of Quiring's mouth or anything like that, but he's got kind of an interesting experiment going on right now.
Yeah.
He built himself up a bike that can run sort of four different setups. He's got
four different wheel sizes.
Yeah, two different wheel sets, four different wheel sizes.
Okay.
So the bike can run anything from a traditional, you know, 2 1/4, 27.5 inch tire, or it can run a 27.5 plus tire, or it can run a traditional 29 by, you know, 2 1/4 tire, or it can run a 29 plus setup.
Huh.
And there's very, you know, minimal geometry difference.
Right.
So, you know, he's been, you know, racing this and, you know, doing things, and he's starting to get some interesting observations about what works well in different spots. And, you know, I don't want to steal his thunder and sort of, you know, his proprietary information and, you know, what he's kind of learning from this.
Right. Because there's a bunch of guys right now listening going bottom bracket, bottom bracket, bottom bracket.
Yeah. There's a bunch of stuff that goes into that. But at the same time, I mean, what he's doing is he's putting it into a race situation and he's trying to suss out, okay, you know, this acceleration piece, how important is this on these types of courses?
Right.
You know, on this type of course, you know, how important is it to have the greater traction and the lower rolling resistance that you get with a plus setup? You know, how does the 27 plus compare to the 29 plus? There's a lot of stuff going on that way. And it's not necessarily been settled out. What I will say, based on my own personal experience and what, you know, I've kind of picked up from other people, not just Scott, is that I definitely think if you were doing just a straight up time trial and you didn't have extended sections on the road, or, you know, you weren't a type of rider that was like so blazingly fast that you're going over 20 miles an hour, that something more towards the plus setup would be faster. Like a 2.8 inch tire or something like that with a good tread design, that could really be the shit for cross country racing. The problem is if you're racing against some dude who's got some super, super lightweight, you know, like 29 or 27 setup, just like traditional tire size.
Yeah.
And you're trying to stay in the wheels. Sometimes you're going to have to put out more energy to stay on those wheels, and you're not going to, you know, be able to make a difference with the plus bike setup.
Gotcha.
So there's times that it's not necessarily what is the purely the fastest setup for a course. It might end up being that it might be the fastest setup compared to your competitors.
Well, what about and I don't know if you're ready to make this turn in the discussion, but what about in a non-race situation? You know,
To be honest, I think the plus bike's a no-brainer.
That's what I was thinking and wanted to say, but I wanted to ask that question first, but just it makes more sense if you're not shooting to really race, but just want to have more fun and go a little bit faster and corner and have some confidence. We've never mentioned that, you know, but
I think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah,
I mean, I think the plus bike is, you know, and this is where I'm kind of guessing, but my guess is that your average bike that people want to ride is going to become a plus bike. And the reason why is because it's forgiving if you're not that skilled a rider. But if you are a skilled rider, and all of a sudden that envelope's got pushed out farther, so you can go even faster. So you're going to be able to do just crazy stuff on it. And, you know, unless you're just like, you know, I mean, you're one of the top racers in the nation.
Right.
You know, you really don't see the negatives that come along with a slightly bigger, heavier, you know, wheel set.
Right. Oh, I got two thoughts. One is enduro plus bike, because it was tested as an enduro setting. Do you think that enduro is going to adopt more and embrace it more? And the second question is, was there the same delay between 26 converting 26er 26 inch riders to 29ers as there is from 29 riders to plus riders?
Bring me back to your first question in a second, but okay. The 26 to 29, yes, definitely.
Okay.
I mean I
remember being stuck in 26 world.
Well, I was an early adopter of 29, and it was one of those things where, like, if I'm trying to stay on some little 26er dude's wheel,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of times I'd be getting gapped. And then I'd have to work extra hard to close the gap. You know, because like it kind of goes back to what I was talking about. If you're in a situation where you're on somebody's wheel and you're just trying to stay on their wheel, you're not going to go through a corner faster than they are. You know, you're limited by how fast they can get around a corner. So if they've got some shitty, slow cornering tire, you're going to go around that corner slow also. And then they're going to get on the pedals and they're going to open a gap on you.
Right.
You know, and it's going to be hard for you to close that gap. When you get in front, okay, maybe all of a sudden the tables completely turn.
Right.
And you start gapping them because you break later into the corner, you go through the corner faster, and you exit with a bike length or two. And now they have to get on the pedals to accelerate to catch up to you, whereas you haven't even put any effort out. You know, so in that scenario, like the plus or, you know, like the plus bike versus the 29er or the, you know, the 29er versus the 26er, that's where, you know, the bigger tire is the advantage. And, you know, when you're the dude on the front and you're dictating, you can make a bigger difference with the plus tire. But if you're trying to follow wheels, you're going to be hosed.
Gotcha.
So it really kind of depends on, you know, whose terms you're on in a race situation. And I guess, and then the other thing that kind of complicates is when you compare like a 26er and a 29er, they have fairly similar aerodynamic drag scenarios. So, you know, it doesn't make a difference. You know, it's like if you're in the front and you're on a 26er, if you're in the front on a 29er, you're still punching the same through the wind.
Right.
Whereas there's scenarios that I've run into with the 29 plus that when I get on the front and I'm the one that's breaking, you know, like the wind, it's like, it can be tough. You know, you get over 20 miles an hour and there is a significant air drag difference. And it's, you know, at normal mountain bike speeds, you don't notice it, but you get going really, you know, fast and you do notice it. Especially when you're in a situation where you're not really getting that big of an advantage out of the lower rolling resistance.
Can't,
you know,
wait
fairly
to,
smooth surface.
Right, right. Can't wait to see that on Saturday for the Arcadian Grit and Gravel race.
You know,
it sucks.
You're bringing up a prime example. And, you know, we're really talking
once
about...
Once I get to the single track, it's great.
Yeah, we're talking about a fairly small local race.
Right.
That is... It starts out on the first portion... it's got some really hilly gravel roads.
Yeah.
There's a few really soft sandy spots on the uphills.
Right.
But there's also some pavement.
Yeah.
And there's some really high speed spots. You know, you got 250, 300 vertical foot climb, and then you got this like gradual long downhill on the road.
Right.
So, you know, aerodynamic drag and these things make a huge difference.
Totally.
And then after doing that for the first half of the race, you dive into single track and it's super fast. It's super flowy. It's a place where a plus bike is ideal.
Just buffed out. Yeah.
Yeah. Because you can take corners way faster. You don't have to slow down.
But by that time, you're so blown out from working your ass off.
And that's exactly it.
Or so, you're so far back.
Right.
That you've got guys in front of you that don't know how to ride those single track or they're on their little 2-inch tire.
Yeah. So if on most courses that are a pure single track course, I would typically go like a full on, you know, 29 plus setup. I'd go with a, you know, 29 by 3-inch tire, right, hands down. Whereas the Arcadian Grit and Gravel, I would not do that. What I would do is I'd ride my Contra mullet, you know, the party in the front and business in the back. Yeah. Which is, typically what I'll do is I'll run either, a Fat Be Nimble on the front, which is kind of like a 2.8-inch tire, or I'll run a Chupacabra, which is a 3-inch tire. And then in the rear, I run as fat a tire as I can, which is a 2.35 Racing Ralph on a fat rim. So it actually measures out at like a 2.5-inch tire.
Right.
So it's kind of like more, it's halfway in between a plus bike and a regular bike.
Yeah.
And the reason why I would run that is because I get almost all the cornering traction I do on my plus bike.
In the front.
Yep. I, you know, get a little bit better aerodynamic drag. I get the lower weight because the climbs are key. The climbs are in places where you really need to be able to, you need to exit the top of that climb at the front of the pack because you're going to be sprinting for single track.
Yeah.
You know, and, the issue is then, you know, you go through the single track for a while and then you get on the, you know, these gravel
back
roads.
To the gravel road.
Yeah. So, you know, you're, your aerodynamic drag starts to become an issue and some of the stuff like this. So I would, you know, in that situation, I'd run a 2.8 inch tire on the front. I'd run my, you know, 235 on the rear. I'd go for the lightest possible bike I could, because I'm a good bike handler, but I'm a marginal climber. I get up the hills well, but you know, that's probably my weakness compared to a pure climber. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like that kind of setup is going to help me to, you know, get into the single track with a really good position. It's going to help me to go on the single track faster and make a gap than I would be compared to a traditional 29er. Not quite as good as if I was a 29 plus, mm-hmm. but it's going to help me to make a separation there. And then it's going to be more aerodynamic than a plus bike when I have to do those gravel sections. So I'm not going to lose as much of my advantage, you know, on those sections, you know? So it's just, it's one of those things where the plus bike isn't quite right. You want to go
right
something in between that and a regular 29er. That's so, a really long-winded way of saying
that. Holy cow. So there is the switch from 26 to 29 is going to be similar to 29 to 29 plus.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we're going to see something very similar. Okay. Because, you know, this video that we've talked about that, you know, Bike Radar did, that's prompted a lot of discussion on MTBR and things like that. And people are like, well, you know, World Cup cross-country racers, they're not riding plus bikes.
Right, right.
Well, the reason why is because, I mean, they're riding these super fucking light bikes because they've got to accelerate like crazy to stay on the wheel of these other guys. And their speeds are so damn high that aerodynamics really come into, you know, play. What? So it doesn't make a difference which is really the fastest time trial setup. It's what is the fastest in that environment? What is causing you not to get dropped? What is causing you not to have gaps open?
But enduro 27 plus?
Yes. Okay, thank you. The big issue with enduro is that the setup in this video was a fairly lightweight tire setup. And he didn't get into shredding tires. Whereas there's a lot of enduro scenarios where you are just going to totally shred tires unless you're running a considerably heavier tire setup than what this dude was in the video.
Yeah.
And that's the issue, because, you know, there's a lot of scenarios where you can get into some gnarly terrain and you need a beefy casing so you're not punching holes through your sidewall.
Gotcha.
And when you're talking that big a casing, that adds a lot of weight. It narrows the gap a lot.
There's a big ass deer walking through your side yard. Sorry. Just distracted there. But are they making casing that's beefy?
There are some companies that are.
Okay.
And there's some companies that aren't. You know, it's like if you look at some of the Schwalbe tires, and this comes back to like when Mark was talking about, okay, what's the idealized setup? It's really hard to tell because different tire manufacturers are offering stuff up in different sizes, and, you know, and tread is a huge, 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 huge component to this.
Yeah.
So if you look at these really lightweight Schwalbe casing tires that are out there that have a kick-ass tread design, that's a really good setup. And I think they're doing it in like 2.8 and 3.0 inch widths.
Okay.
For 27 plus. And, you know, both of those are really, 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 really kick-ass tires. So when you ride that and you compare it to, let's say, a 29 plus or, you know, something else, you know, a different rim width or whatever, mm-hmm. with a different tire, it's hard to know, okay, how much of the effect is this? Is this the tire tread? How much of this is, you know, the rim width and, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
It's tough to end up doing apples to apples.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot going into it. And I guess, and that's holy the thing, shit. You know, there's been such an explosion of different rims, different tires, different setups, you know, it's hard to say this is it.
Right, right. Watch the video, because I've watched it 3 or 4 times. Watch it again. And then come on back to us and we're going to talk about something totally fucking different.
Sounds good.
Cheers.
Welcome back, campers.
Here we are. This is the end of the six-pack.
So, you've had to listen to me blather for a really long time. Lots of blah, blah, blah.
That's okay, though. You know way more about anything than I do. Nipple washers, man. But something that as Ken and I have been starting to travel around a little bit more, an app that we use is this MTB Project. What we found is it's really, really helpful. It doesn't require any cell service. It uses GPS. And you can be out in the middle of BFE.
Well, it does require cell service to download it initially.
Yeah.
You can basically download trails by states.
Yeah.
So you can download it so you got it locally saved on your, you know, cell phone or whatever.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's like if your cell signal craps out, so what? It's using your GPS.
So in the fall, instead of Iceman, we went to Brown County. And we downloaded all the Indiana trails. Downloaded Brown County State Park trails and didn't need any self-service when we were there. If it was there, that's great, but we had those maps on there. So we go to Brown County.
Great trail descriptions. It gives you elevation data, just everything.
And as you're riding, you stop, and it gives you the blue dot of where you are, and you can look at profiles of where you are. It's really, really good app. And if you travel, it's awesome. I mean, it's not, if you go out and do your 13-mile loop on your own trails, it's worthless. But if you're going to go around the country, more than likely, the trails that you're looking for are going to be on here. But what I noticed is that when I got back home, not only from Brown County, but also coming from Pisgah, was that our local trail system of 40 miles plus was not on the Mount Bike Project. So I asked Ken about it. I was like, hey, have you ever done this? He's like, nope. All you need is a GPX file and throw it in there. So, well, actually, you had dabbled in it a little bit.
Yeah, I had dabbled. And we'll get into that.
Yeah. So what I did is I, you know, logged into my account at Mountain Bike Project and uploaded the local NUE. Is it a local NUE? But an NUE race that happens on our local trails.
Yeah, the National Ultra Endurance Series.
Yeah, the Lumberjack 100. And just uploaded that file into
bada boom bada ding. You're thinking you're done.
There it is. I was like, sweet, there it is. You know, a couple descriptions, you know, a couple bullets on, yes, it's single track, yes, it's family friendly, bring your dogs in with a leash, here's the title of it, here's a description, boom, I'm done.
Nope.
No. So I get an email back from it was a couple really good guys saying, hey, we noticed that this trail system, this route that you've put on here is made up of 15 more trails. So could you input 15 more trails? And I was like, sure, okay. So the last 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, when I've got some free time besides grading, you know, chemistry tests, I've been trying to, you know, dial in these GPS points for this map and naming it and writing a description for it and giving an overall view of it and labeling it.
Can you provide a little bit better description?
Could you provide a little bit better description? And that's the thing. Your local trail system has this connector trail that gets you from this kick-ass trail to another kick-ass trail. It's 0.7 miles long.
And there's not a whole lot to say about that 0.7.
No, exactly. It's the same soil system. It just gets you from A to B, and MTB Project wants me to kind of give you an overall description of it. And I was like, grr, but, you know, I understand. I mean, they're not from here. They don't know.
Yeah, and part of the reason why I bring this up is because this is an amazing resource. I'm so thankful to everybody who's contributed to this and jumped through the hoops and has done all this good stuff, because it has become such a good resource. And if people aren't using it out there, I highly recommend you download the app, you get this, you check it out, you know, for your next trip, because it is the best source that I've seen.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, you know, from the little bits I've heard from them, you know, they're starting to get into fat bike loops and some stuff like that. They want to do that. However, if you're going to add a trail, and I highly recommend you do, be ready for the long haul, because you're going to have to provide a lot of info.
Well, and that gives them more credibility, too, because you know that it's just not some, you know, Johnny come lately that said, hey, you know, hey, dude, my trail's pretty sweet, you know, because when I'm finally done with the Big M and the Manistee National Forest and the Udell Trail System, You're going to get...
It's going to be kick-ass. You're going to know.
They're making me do a really good description of every 0.7 mile of connector trail and describing it as a rider. And it gives it a lot of credibility. It makes sense. But there's some trails on there I don't want to put on there, too. You know, I'm just like, avoid this trail. You know, don't waste your time on this thing. Or there's, you know, for the 100-miler, there's a couple two-tracks that you're going to be on for 3 or 4 or 5 miles. I don't want to put that, you know, on that thing. I don't want to describe this snowmobile route that you take during the summer, but it's a great resource, man.
Yeah, no, it's. I guess the reason why we brought it up is because in our travels, that's been like the one mainstay. If I have to go to Chicago on a business trip, what's the first thing I'm doing? I wonder what, you know, trails are on MTB project that are in that general vicinity. Totally. Do I need to bring my bike?
Yeah.
You know, is there any possible chance that I'm going to be able to work a ride in? And, you know, there's a lot of situations where you can. Right. So, you know, I just, you know, this is much as a tip of the hat to everything those guys are doing and everybody's contributed to it as, you know, encouraging other people to check it out and, you know, contribute to it if they've got endurance for details.
It's really cool to stop, flip on your phone, and check out where you are in the hill. You're like, oh, shit, because it shows you in that profile where you are. Yeah, but they are doing some really good stuff, and I don't know. I see it advertised in bike magazines.
Yep.
Here for those guys.
Yeah, know? And I encourage them to, you know, basically go down the winter fat bike route as much as they possibly can, because I would love to end up seeing – you know, some more winter specific stuff.
Yeah, totally. It'd be great for fat bikes.
Yeah, and you know, that's.
I don't know how you're going to describe it though. You know, because fat biking is not, you know, high elevation
well,
stuff.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, like we live in an area where we're super lucky because we've got hundreds and hundreds of miles of, you know, snowmobile trails and things like that we can ride.
Legacy.
Yes, the legacy trails. You know, and I would love to end up adding some of that stuff in, because that was actually what my introduction was, because it's like, you know, we've got this section of National Forest just south of Manistee where there's at least 40 to 50 miles of trail that gets just the right amount of snowmobile traffic.
Right.
So it basically gets groomed for you by the snowmobilers, but most rides, you never actually see a snowmobile.
Never.
Yeah. You don't have to smell their stinky two-stroke.
Right.
You know, you don't have to end up pulling over on the side, you know, anything like that. They just basically groom it perfectly for you.
But none of the trails are named.
Right. So, you know.
It'd be really cool if you could just put it on there, you know, and put the route on there, and then people could park at the end of the forest road there.
That's exactly
pull out their thing and then go.
Yeah. And there's no, like, official maps for where it is.
Right.
There's no good resources. So I'm like, sweet. MTB project. I think this would be a perfect application. Let's start throwing up some trails on there.
Right.
And it wasn't a good fit for the amount of detail that they required. Even though, you know, everything's official, it's like it's on Forest Service roads or, you know, trails or whatever and things like that. It's one of those things that it wasn't a good fit, which is a bummer because I'd like to end up sharing that with the rest of the world.
Right on.
But MTB project, I love you.
Totally. And I think that if I look at my outline here that Ken made at work today, that pretty much closes Fat Camp number 13.
Yes, it does.
Lucky number 13. And once again, if you want to get in touch with us, it's the email is fatcamppodcasters, because Fat Camp Podcast was taken. Like,
man.
Really? Like, I want to send him an email. Be like, what the hell, you know? So it's fatcamppodcasters@gmail.com. That'll get you in touch with Ken and I directly. And also, it's already going. It's up there. Instagram, if you go to Fat Camp Podcasters, there's a beautiful, beautiful picture of myself there.
Yeah, we'll try to provide you all sorts of other fodder.
Right. We'll throw some stuff up in there. So I think that's it.
I can't think of anything else.
All right, so we're on a regular Greg got us on a Sven got us on a regular rotating.
He's trying to make us regular,
right? So if you check out, I think there's a link in one of the Fat Weekly Doses of Fat about when our show is going to be.
What the summer schedule will be.
Yeah, and so We're locked. We're locked in. We're under pressure.
Yeah,
now.
we're gonna have to end up coming up with content to talk about.
Right.
But we got a big race. Andy's first 100 miler.
Hey. Oh, my gee.
Yeah, we'll have plenty to digest.
Ay, Dios mio.
Discuss.
Yeah.
He's so gonna anyways, kick ass.
Yeah.
Watch
thanks,
out.
Thanks for comment. Thanks for listening to us. Send us an email. Comment at the bottom there. Check out those links. And till next time, campers.
Cheers. Thanks for listening to today's show. The music we're using on today's show is Fat Apple and their song Government Cheese from the Internet Archive. You can find all our shows at fatbike.com, including notes for today's show.